Welcome to the Spike Feed, your leading Magic the Gathering podcast. What is up? My name is Curtis, and I'm just your typical Spike. On the line with me, my good buddy, who's brought the V-neck back.
It's back.
Right? Cameron McCoy, producer extraordinaire. How you doing, man?
Not too bad, man. How about you?
You know, I'm great. This show is going to be full. Not only do we have what we've been playing to talk about, we have spoilers. Wizards of the Coast has lost their minds with this. I don't know what is happening there.
You were just explaining to me, which we'll probably get into later, but like I started to have like a legitimate nosebleed from excitement. It was awesome.
Well, I'm glad you're excited. I don't know if I should be excited or concerned or a combination thereof. I mean, we'll figure it all out soon.
Oh, yeah.
But we're also going to talk about our 2017 wish list. We missed an episode because of Cameron's what's perfectionism. You said, Hey, Curtis, you sound horrible, so we can't have a show this week. So I'm still blaming you.
Thanks.
But anyway, let's talk about what we played. So you actually played Standard this week.
Yeah. So just to get there, I guess. So on Friday night, go play Legacy, actually. And I totally forgot that like half of like the guys that I play with for Legacy are all at GP Louisville. So they're there having a great time. I think I've been kind of following them on Facebook and Twitter, and it looks like they're doing great, you know. So that's really, really cool. But for me, that meant that there was nobody there for the Legacy tournament for Friday night. And instead, I needed to play Standard. And I show up not having a Standard deck. I mean, I have some pieces for Blue-White Flash, but I have not played Standard since Kaladesh has been out in the wild.
Tell me you bought an event deck.
No. A guy at the shop, he's like, hey, I have Blue-White Flash sitting here. I'm playing Aetherworks Marvel. Do you want that? And I'm like, yeah, let's do that. So played Blue-White Flash, and I love the deck. It's great. Standard is it was actually really refreshing to play Standard just because I have felt so out of touch with it lately. Mm-hmm. So let's see. What did I play? I played against Aetherworks Marvel, which I think Blue-White actually has the best matchup against. It seems, you know, there's so many good like interactive things that you can do with the variety of cards that you have. I played against a blue-red artifacts deck, which I can't remember what it is, but it's using energy and whatnot, and it's all going towards the Gear Hulk or the not a Gear Hulk. I can't remember.
Metalwork Colossus.
There we go. Yes, Metalwork Colossus. So like on turn six, you know, I didn't really know what was happening. I was kind of playing a little. Maybe not as aggressively as I should have, and he had like two Metalwork Colossuses on one turn, which was hilarious. Lost that match or whatever, but then and then played just like a green-red energy deck as well. And that was it. I left early just because I wanted to get home. I had to get up early the next day, so I ended up going 1-2, not knowing anything about the Standard matchup, but had a good time, and kind of wet my whistle where I think I want to play some more Standard. And I think with especially now with the cards that have been released, I'm really chomping at the bit for Standard. I'm excited, and so I'll probably, you know, drop a few hundred bucks and or trade some cards here and there to get into a Standard deck.
Yeah, I'm struggling with what to play in Standard. I'm leaning towards Flash just because as the format gets more combo centric, counter spells get better. And so that's something I'm looking at. I mean, currently I'm playing Green Black Delirium, but I've been playing more, you know, other things online. But I'm glad that you got to see it. It's a very different flavor than Collected Company Standard.
Oh my gosh! Yeah.
And so, whether that's good or bad, I think some of what Frontier is, and I mean, we've definitely talked about kind of this middle format existence. But I think some of what Frontier is also people really not enjoying Standard and not having the resources or the cards for Modern and wanting to play that Standard again, you know? Mm-hmm. Because a ton of the cards that are in Frontier eventually won't be good enough for Frontier, right?
Yeah.
Because it's such a small pool at the moment. Anyway, this week, you know, I played a Modern League. Grixis Delver is kind of the deck I've landed on in terms of Modern. If I'm going to play Modern side events quite a bit at the GP, in Omaha, then Grixis Delver is likely what I'm going to play. Just, you know, reps with that. I went 3-2 in a league. It was not super exciting. Mm-hmm. What was exciting was triple Zendikar this week. So earlier in 2016, way back when, I complained that flashback drafts were single elimination, which I have a huge problem with in general, but especially with flashback drafts. So they've decided to put in a league structure, which is a little bit different. It's more like Hearthstone in that, okay, you jump into the league and you hit one of the two things, either three wins or two losses. When one of those things happens first, then you're out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Zendikar compared to Kaladesh, Kaladesh is like, you know, whenever you order a dessert at a fancy restaurant and it's way over the top, it's like a cheesecake with this and that, and there's all this complexity and it's like way too rich, and then you eat like about half of it and then you're like asking your wife like, hey, do you want the rest of this? This is like way too much for me.
Yep, yep, yep.
And then you order the coffee with it. Zendikar is the coffee. Zendikar is like, nah, dog, no complexity here. Let's wash that sucker out. It is...
Your metaphors, man.
Zendikar, Triple Zen is, I think, the most aggressive limited format I've ever played. I mean, your deck is mostly 2 and 3 drops. And green is just terrible. Like, there's all these, like, 6-drop or 5-drop green cards that are the worst. They're just terrible. There's a ton of tempo spells, but what I found the most refreshing about it is, so first of all, Triple Zendikar is when, right around that time where I was digging deep into limited. It's also, oddly... when the podcast Limited Resources really started to hit the ground running. And so I learned a lot of limited from that while I was playing Triple Zen. And it is the old days where playing an aura in limited is a dumb thing to do. Like, you will get punished so hard for playing an aura. And that, like, it was almost like a spiritual level when people would apply an aura on something, and I was like, hey, burst lightning, see you later. Mm-hmm. That 2-for-1 that doesn't really happen in limited a ton anymore, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That instant speed removal. I mean, there's burst lightning and disfigure at the common level in this set.
Yeah, yeah.
And, man, I mean, so I fired up some Battlestar Galactica original soundtrack and just went into a deep haze of triple Zendikar drafts. In about 2 days, I drafted it like 4 or 5 times. So, I love that set. I think Zen Zen Worldwake is a little bit better, but it harkens back to a more aggressive
I think
version.
Zen Zen Worldwake, I went on a few like limited tournaments with you, and I think that was like the first time I ever played like a limited game was with you, and I thought it was double ones in a card. Yeah, yeah. So anyway, pretty cool.
Yeah, and then we have to wait a couple weeks on Magic Online to see what their flashback standard is going to be. They're going to have like a break for Cube again, and then they're going to get into that. So Zendikar ends on Wednesday. If you're probably listening to this on Monday out there, so you know you still have a couple days to do it. But the league, I mean, was super full. I want to say it hit like 1,000 users on Saturday.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's a really great way to get kind of these old cards out. Like, I opened a couple fetch lands over the course of my mini drafts. But it's also, you know, if you're the kind of person that has drafted that set a ton, you feel highly advantaged. But you're also not, you know, up a creek if you've never touched it before. You can just enjoy it one time, not feel like you lost a ton, and get your 2 matches out of it. Now, again, I would prefer it was just straight Swiss and you got the full 3 matches, but... this is a compromise that'll do for me.
For sure.
Anyway, so I want to cut us off there, Cameron, because of the amount of spoilers. We've limited ourselves to like 7 cards, but there's just a lot to talk about. And then we'll get into our wish list for 2017. We'll be right back. And welcome back, guys. So tons of spoilers, tons. Now, we've limited ourselves just for the sake of everybody's sanity.
Yeah, right.
To these like 7-ish cards. But this set, I think we can both agree, Cameron, where there are a few eyebrow raisers, right?
Nutso is what I would call it. But yeah, yeah.
Yeah. and there's a lot of theories as to why this is happening. Some people think that You know, they had the set design in mind with the, you know, original set rotation, and that this set would be in standard for not that long. Or maybe they're just looking to push what standard is to try and, you know, appease players, or it's just a classic mistake, which every single artifact-centric set, every single one, or I should say block, has had massive mistakes. Massive, right? It's like colorless cards are a problem. Just putting that out there. So, Cameron, I'm going to start us off with our blue friend, if that's fine.
I love it.
You know I like to read the blue legends of blue planeswalkers. That's my thing. So, so we're going to start off with Baral, Chief of Compliance. He's a generic and a blue for a legendary human wizard. Instant and sorcery spells you cast cost one less. Whenever a spell or ability you control counters a spell, you may draw a card. If you do, discard a card. So, Cameron, what do you think of this guy?
Oh, there's so much potential here. I really, really like this card. I'm trying to put this in the context of like maybe modern or legacy before I even think about standard. Because I think in standard, it seems like it's going to be it seems like it's like the control player's card that you're going to want for whatever this control deck is, if it's Grixis or whatever. I'm leaning towards maybe Grixis or maybe Esper. We'll see. But yeah, just the ability to tempo out your opponent with that one less for a counter spell or for a removal spell is huge. That's really, really powerful. And then the fact that you get to draw a card and loot, as we've seen with Jace, as we've seen with so many other cards and that have come out in the past few years, that loot ability is incredibly powerful. So two thumbs up for me on this card.
I really like this card, and not just because of the rate. Like, 2-mana 1/3 with just the instant sorcery spells you cast costs one less. Like, in Modern Storm, which isn't a big thing right now, you'll probably replace two Electromancers with him. Mm-hmm. You can't replace them all because he's legendary, but just the fact that he's one in a blue versus a red in a blue is a big deal. In terms of standard, I think you're going to play this in blue-white flash because the reduction, if you even get that reduced spell one time, just think of the improvement. It turns Spell Shrivel into Mana Leak.
Yep.
Right? It turns Glimmer of Genius into three instant speed, scry two, draw two. Yep. Like, ugh.
Declaration in Stone becomes just a path, right?
Yeah. So yeah. Whenever you frame it in that way, he still gets in a smuggler's copter, right?
Yep.
He still plays pretty decent defense, and then combine that with the loot ability, which obviously you're going to pack a ton of counterspells with him. I think he'll play well with Torrential Gearhulk. You know, there's just a lot there that's nice. Now, the classic problem with cards like this is that, you know, whenever you're playing a tap-out controller or a draw-go, that they don't have a place to point their removal spells. So you've already kind of gained some kind of bizarre card advantage, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it is possible that he is just a sideboard card, you know, that comes in. But in the mirrors, there's just a lot here to like. And anytime we see a cheap creature with a big wall of text, that's something that, you know, even something like D'Apala, whenever we first saw her from last set, the dwarf pilot lady, we're like, I don't know, you know? And she's seeing a ton of standard play because of all the utility that's built in. So,
for sure.
Yeah, she's great. Okay. So, Cameron, this is one I'm kind of giving you a bizarre one. Hope of Gearper.
Yeah, Hope of Gearper. It is an artifact, legendary artifact creature. It's also a Thopter, and it costs one with power and toughness of 1/1. Flying, sacrifice Hope of Gearper until your next turn. Target player who was dealt combat damage by Hope of Gearper this turn can't cast non-creature spells. Yeah, this is really interesting. And it seems to have utility the way that something like Xanted Swarm has utility, right? And being colorless once again seems very, very powerful, where you're not having to side in a green card if need be, right? So, in that sense, that's where I see this having like the most potential. But it's also going to be, once again, I think, interesting and standard.
Yeah, to me, this is a modern card.
Okay.
It is just something that you can play in Affinity. whenever, so let's say your affinity versus ad nauseum, right? Or something like that. You can actually, or scape shift, there's a good example as well, where you can just shut them down for a certain turn or two that you know you're likely to get comboed out. Because, you know, modern's such a race against time. And essentially doing this to your opponent just once or twice whenever your affinity versus scape shift is the difference. It's the difference in the matchup. And so I think this is one that, you know, hey, look, it's probably going to be a dollar rare or 50 cent rare, but that ability matters. And Xanthid Swarm is so such a weird comp, and it's a card that you look at and you're like, okay. But it's seen eternal play forever because of that ability. So I don't know about standard. It's going to depend on how standard shakes out, but I like it in modern.
Yeah, yeah. I'll agree with you on that.
All right. Well, here we go down combo road. So Metallic Mimic is our next card. It is a two colorless for an artifact creature shapeshifter. He's a 2/1. As he enters the battlefield, choose a creature type. He is the chosen creature type in addition to its other types. Each other creature you control of the chosen type enters the battlefield with an additional 1/1 counter on it. All right, so Cameron, we went over the combo a little bit. Do you remember the other piece of this?
I don't remember the other card off the top of my head. So you're okay, so look,
this card just seems like a generic tribal card that's fine, right? But the card in question is Animation Module. So Animation Module says, whenever one or more +1/+1 counters are placed on a permanent you control, you may pay a colorless. If you do, create a 1/1 colorless servo artifact creature token. So you're going to name servo, right?
Yep.
So when a servo comes in, basically you can create a basic version of Thopter Sword where you're paying one mana to create a new servo over and over and over again, as much mana as you have. So if you untap with both of these, we're off to the races, right? First of all, this is the first of a couple combos we're going to talk about. How do you feel about them being aggressive with combos and standard for starters? And do you think this one is good enough to see standard play?
Yes, I think this has enough potential to see standard play. But as we're going to see probably with some of these other combo potential decks, this just might not be that powerful, but I think you're going to see a lot of people trying to utilize it in some way. And I'm just trying to figure out like if it's like that blue-red artifacts deck. Is it where are we going to see this at? But I mean, if you're able to generate enough mana, i.e., just like the Thopter Fount, like a you know a Tezzeret deck or something like that. I don't know. You can just swarm the battlefield with a ton of Thopters and. Seems like it's a legitimately decent deck, I guess. So I'm interested to see this in standard. Whether or not it will actually be more powerful than other standard decks right now, I don't know, but it definitely has potential.
Yeah, the question is the shell, right? Like, okay, on its face, creating these, you know, Thopters, like if you can get the combo to go, that's a powerful, if not game-winning thing that you can do. It seems to happen somewhat early. But let's be honest here. Both of these cards are pretty much junk within of themselves, right? One of the things that makes Splinter Twin so good was the fact that Pestermiter, Deceiver, Exarch were just good cards on their own that created a ton of tempo disadvantage for your opponent. Neither of these cards within of themselves do a ton, so you have to kind of set it up. Now, in the past, when these combo decks have existed where the cards themselves are junk and you kind of have to... build around it, the options were load up a bunch of defense mechanisms in your deck to where you're basically playing control, and this is a kind of side win condition, or the ultimate win condition, but not something you're rushing to. Or the flip side is you are playing a multiple combo deck, which is certainly possible from what we're seeing, where there are three or four different ways to win, and so this just happens to be one of those in the toolbox. So I'm medium on this card. Like, look, it's definitely something that could be a standard standard deal. But one thing we have to point out, with Thopter Sword, you did gain life. And that's not nothing.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Okay, so our next card, Cameron, our other combo friend, Crackdown Construct.
Yeah, Crackdown Construct costs 4 colorless. It's an artifact creature with a construct. And then it's a 2-2 power and toughness with whenever you activate an ability of an artifact or creature that isn't a mana ability, Crackdown Construct gets +1/+1 until end of turn. So the big thing that you pointed out, and as soon as I saw that, I was like, ooh, this looks saucy and really, really fun, is that it's activating an ability of artifact or creature, something like Wandering Fumarole. When you activate it to become a creature, it has a 0 activation ability to switch it from a power and toughness of 1/4 to 4/1. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. And so you go infinite with Crackdown Construct, where you could have, you know, 300-300 swinging at you on possibly turn 5, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, there's also there's like fling effects. I want to say there's an Eldrazi that can throw a creature at somebody's head. So yeah, there's interesting little things like that. This is the combo I'm probably the least high on. Now again, the combo we just mentioned could go with this card, right? It, like,
exactly.
Both combos could just totally exist in one deck and it's fine. But this one, not only is it the most fragile, it can get chumped, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have some kind of fling effect or whatever. And, you know, there's a lot of mana to jump into having this guy do this, right? Now, like, obviously, you can get him into play a little bit early, but we're talking about a turn 5 attack, right?
Yep.
And I don't know. Like, again, Aetherworks Marvel is in this format. And so, you know, you could also be facing down an Emrakul or whatever within short order. So not only do you have to build this combo deck, you also have to build interaction against the other combo decks, which is kind of an interesting game of cat and mouse.
Mm-hmm.
All right, last combo deck we'll discuss, which again, we might be talking about one deck called Combo. I don't know.
Right?
Felidar Guardian, which is 3 and a white for a creature cat beast, as Felidars tend to be. He's a 1/4. When he enters the battlefield, you may exile another target permanent you control, then return that card to the battlefield under its owner's control. So this is the big one that everybody's talking about. It's with Saheeli Rai. Her -2 creates an artifact token copy of a creature. And so basically you blink each other until you have infinite Felidar Guardians. Cameron, what do you think, man? Splinter Twin's back.
Splinter Twin is back. And this is like the legitimate combo deck, I think. First and foremost, I remember just last week looking at Saheeli in the case and thinking, like, that's a shame that she's not going to have any play. The abilities seem really interesting. And here we go. It's going to actually happen. She's jumped in price from what was $4 or $5 Planeswalker to, I want to say, $30 now. Maybe Star City has her at $20, but, I mean, the shop is already taking advantage of the fact that people are going to try to play with her. So, yeah, the combo potential of this, I think, is huge. It's a turn 4 combo, right? I mean, Saheeli is a 3 casting cost.
Mm-hmm.
Am I thinking that right? Yeah. So, you know, if you can protect Saheeli on turn 3, get to turn 4, cast this, it's go time, right? I mean, you're going to win the game. So, yeah, I there's nothing else to say. It seems to have, like, it's going to fit right into a Jeskai combo type deck, and I think you're going to see this in Standard and in Modern for sure.
Yeah, so right now I think the original, the animation module Metallic Mimic combo will be with this deck, because you can, you know, you can blink the Mimic, you know, you can do other things. Like, the deck doesn't seem completely awful. You'll probably have to play 4 deck and stones. You'll have to, you know, play these kinds of cards to support the underside of your deck, because, you know, a Smuggler's Copter deck just might run you over. But yeah, so first of all, there's been a lot of discussion whether this was done on purpose or on accident. Like, Saheeli Rai and Felidar Guardian are in the same block. Like, there's just no way that they didn't know that this was a combo deck that they were putting in Standard.
Sure.
And the other thing is, like, the big difference between this and Splinter Twin is Splinter Twin, the creature came in at instant speed. So
yeah,
that was, like, a huge problem with that deck in terms of managing it in the context of Standard. Whereas with this, I feel like you have to have some awareness that it's happening. Like, they have to cast the Healy Rye on turn three, who basically doesn't do anything, right? Mm-hmm. Like, she would have to create a copy of a, you know, or she'll scry, which, by the way, that's pretty huge now because you're scrying to a combo piece, which I think still points to the fact that they knew that they were doing this. But Healy Rye could just be dead. Like, you
very
know, so
easily, yeah.
Especially against like a Copter's deck or like Blue White Flash, you're still able to, you know, counter the Felidar Guardian, you know. So I think there's going to be interesting play. Like, I'm actually encouraged by the existence of this combo in Standard. But look, guys, we're going to have to live with it for a long time. They're in the same block together. We're going to be, those two are going to be teammates for a long time. And you might see that this combo deck is not good enough for right now. And then when Battle and Shadows block rotate, then we're just left with Kaladesh and the other set, Amaket. Then this combo deck might be the tier one, you know? So I think it's encouraging. On the flip side, I also think that the Crackdown Construct Wandering Fumarole, while you could fit it in this deck, I think now we're talking about almost too much jank in terms of combo.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you have to have interaction with the other decks, right?
Yeah, otherwise, I mean, they're just... You're going to die no matter what, right? I mean, they're just going to remove every single thing you have.
Yeah. Yeah, and then the Felidar Guardian. I mean, let's be honest here. Unlike Pestermiter Splinter Twin or Pestermiter Deceiver Exarch, this is a bad creature otherwise, right?
What are you talking about? It's awesome to have a 1/4. It's lightning bolt proof.
Cameron, your love of cats is shining through, okay?
Yeah, it's not a really bad card. You're totally
it's
right.
A really bad standard card. And so, you know, it better happen. It better happen for you. Okay, so last card. Oh no, I'm sorry. We have a couple more, don't we?
Yeah.
We have Spire of Industry. Cameron, why don't you go ahead and read this one, man?
Yeah, Spire of Industry. It's a land. Tap to add one colorless to your mana pool, or tap and pay one life to add one mana of any color to your mana pool. Activate this ability only if you control an artifact. So. Yeah, this is a really, really good card. It's very similar to City of Brass or
Mana Confluence.
Never remember Mana Confluence. Thank you. The only thing that makes this possibly better is the ability that you can just tap it for a colorless mana, which is not nothing. You know, but I'm trying to think, like, where do we see City of Brass most played? It's probably in like Legacy Dredge. Mana Confluence is once again similar in that case. Mm-hmm. So like, where are you going to be having an artifact in play that could, you know, say something as far as like what you will need in order to make this a legitimately playable card? But hey, just having paying one life and being able to have, you know, multicolored mana, it could, you know, maybe mean something as far as like a four color combo deck, because they're okay paying one life to do that, right? So this seems like a really good card in Standard. You know, where its place is as far as Modern or Legacy, I don't know.
So Legacy, I don't think I can come, I mean, Servant or whatever, you know, you could again, we talked about the potential for some kind of you know, metalworker deck before. Mm-hmm. But this is more like in perhaps Modern Affinity, but almost definitely Lantern Control. Mm-hmm. Because the problem with like Lantern Control is like they were actually playing Llanowar Waste, I think, for a while, so they could actually you know, support what they were doing. But with this, you're able to, because you in Lantern Control, in that style of deck, a slower artifact deck, you don't want to play City of Brass because you don't want to deal yourself the damage, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas this, you can pay colorless to, you know, play all your janky artifacts, and then if you need to Inquisition or cast Gear per Aether Grid or whatever it is in Lantern Control, you can just use this. Affinity, I think Glimmer Void's probably still better, but maybe not. You know, because mm-hmm. I've certainly played against Affinity where, you know, I've wrathed them or, you know, done whatever, and they've lost their Glimmer Void,
sure.
which is a pretty heartbreaking thing on their end. So maybe this is better. It's certainly going to be more affordable. So, you know, the players that are looking to get into Affinity, you know, you'll probably just see this here and there. It's a more than fine replacement card for them. Anyway, so last card I wanted to talk about. Oh, actually, Cameron, this is yours too, right? You wanted to.
Yeah.
You were like forcing me to talk about this card, even though everybody under the sun's discussed it forever. It kind of fell in our gap. So
yeah, yeah. So the last card we have is Fatal Push. It's an instant that costs one black. Destroy target creature if it has converted mana cost two or less. And then it has Revolt. Destroy that creature if it has converted mana cost of four or less. Instead, if a permanent you control left the battlefield this turn. So this card, man, I mean, I know everybody's already talked about it, but this to me is the most important card that has been printed in a long, long time as far as being an Eternal player. Black having a instant speed removal that could possibly get you a, you know, creature of four or less is so huge. Like, this is as good as Path and as good as Lightning Bolt, in my opinion. And I'm so excited. When I open this card, I'm going to buy every single one, because as long as Modern and Legacy exist, both of those formats exist, this is a card that Black players are going to need.
So it is very, very, very good. So the problem with Legacy is the Black deck that need, like, I think it'll be a sideboard card in Legacy because Disfigure is, mm-hmm. you know, like,
yeah, yeah.
Basically, all the Black decks just play Abrupt Decay main deck, and that's more because, I mean, of the players that are there, like Miracles and whatever. Like, there's just so many matchups like Storm and Miracles where this card does an actual nothing. Mm-hmm. But I think this card, to your point, is as important as Path is in terms of Modern. I've heard some people say that it's a cyborg card in Modern, and I strongly disagree with that. I think it is. I mean, first of all, just without the Revolt mechanic. I mean, just one mana, converted mana cost two or less is massive. Mm-hmm. Massive. It is, first of all, Grixis, not just Grixis control, but also, you know,
fairies,
Jund. I mean, you're just going to play it because Modern still, even though it's a combo format, it's a creature combo format, mm-hmm. right? And with Snapcaster, it's crazy. With Fetchlands, it's crazy. It's just like I'm probably going to end up playing for this. And Modern's kind of gotten away from Thoughtseize and Inquisition being the best Black one drops, mm-hmm. Because so many of the decks don't care. Like Infect, there's a ton of redundancy. You can't hit Become Immense with Inquisition anymore, and those cards are awful top decks with the speed of the format, like mm-hmm. awful. Whereas this is. I mean, this can get you out of a million jams. Also, kills Ink Moth Nexus. I mean, there's just so many things,
yeah.
Right? And think about this. There are going to be moments where, because it's one mana, they activate an Ink Moth, right? You go mm-hmm. to Fatal Push it, they Vines of Asswoods, and you still have the mana to Snapcaster another Fatal Push. Or, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
The efficiency of it is... like just through the roof. It'll also be standard playable. Like it's a great standard removal spell.
Oh yeah, but an automatic four of if you're playing any sort of Black version of a deck for sure.
Yeah, well, I mean it kills Smuggler's Copter. That's right? All you need to know, yeah. Right? but yeah, in the chat, somebody's saying that the card is busted way better than Path. Like the problem with Path is, I mean, obviously you're giving them a rampant growth, but also Path. I mean, White is great for sideboard cards. Right, but like, mm-hmm. just look at the best decks in the format right now. White is just not seeing a ton of play because everything's this hyperlinear aggro deck. And as that happens, tempo gets better, control gets worse because control will play on the tempo. Mm-hmm. But right now, we're in this format where everything's hyper fast, and this is just what the doctor ordered.
Yeah, like Esper control could be a thing. I get, you know, I mean. That one mana, I can't get over like how much better that is than any sort of Doomblade effect that like exists, right? So, mm-hmm. yeah, so exciting about this.
Right, and I mean, I think we can make the pretty strong argument that it, you know, not only does it replace like Doomblade, but it might also replace Spell Snare in a lot of decks.
Yeah, yeah, right.
So, I mean, super good, super good. Okay, so Cameron, 2017 wish list, man, talk to me.
Oh boy. Okay. So number one, I want to see. I want to revisit the ban list in Modern, and I've made this very, very public before. I want to see Snapcaster Mage. I want to see Stoneforge Mystic unbanned from Modern, and I've made my case several times already. Nobody can convince me otherwise. It's a card that's just okay. It dies to Fatal Push, which is awesome. And so I want to see Stoneforge unbanned. That's numero uno.
Yeah, the Modern ban list, I think we're going to see some changes, specifically with it not being a Pro Tour format. And it's a really good way to engage your audience and kind of, juice interest whenever suddenly, hey, guys, Deathrite Shaman's unbanned or something, or Stoneforge Mystic. I think that generates, it's good PR, and it's a better PR move than banning things, right? I think we kind of got to the point where banning needs to not be an issue anymore, right?
Yeah.
So what was your other thing besides banning?
So the other thing I want to see is I think like the Masterpiece sets are great. I love seeing like all these new artifacts in the wild. Not new, but you know, legacy, modern, playable artifacts in the wild. I would love to see this trend to continue, and maybe we get, you know, other card. I would love to see other Masterpiece cards, whether that's like another land cycle or, you know, maybe creatures now, instant or sorcery spells, you know, something like that, where maybe we can bring the price down on other legacy modern playable cards. So hey, that's the other thing I want to see.
You're going to get your wish. They've confirmed they're going to do that for every set.
Seriously? Oh, okay. So there you go. I get my wish. I don't know what it will be. So
spend more time on Reddit, man. You would know these things. Anyway, so I'm just going to go through my list like super fast. Mm-hmm. Some of these are probably obvious, especially if you've been a longtime listener. Number one, guys, top of the list every single year, get this artifact frame figured out. Give me my brown back, okay? I can't get, somewhere we just need to have spliced together all the times I flipped out about this silver artifact frame. Hate it. Hate it.
I don't know what you're talking about, man. It's beautiful. It's shiny.
Amaket's an opportunity, right? You can go back to like a brownish, like an artifact that I found, right? Instead of, you know, the silverware section of Bed Bath & Beyond. But that's just me. Anyway, reserve list. Obviously, I want it gone. That's not going to change, but one can hope, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the other... the other big things that I would really like to change, first of all, those of us who play a lot of Magic Online and those who don't, who are Magic players that you've not gotten into the fold, we all want one thing, and that is an indication of what Magic's digital future is, right? Mm-hmm. I think we can all agree it's a mess. Magic Online has had a huge improvements over the past 18 months. Like, I think you're not paying attention if you don't believe that, right?
Yeah.
Treasure chests, I think, have been a failure. A lot of people don't like those. I don't know enough about them. Like, I think I've opened, like, three in my life or something because I don't play Constructed Leagues that much. Whereas the league structure, limited leagues, the flashback leagues have all been huge successes. Are there things I would like to see change? Yes. For example, Legacy being a 12-ticket league only kind of stinks. You know, stuff like that, but like little problems. And they made some major changes to it. But overall, I think it's more accessible. However, supposedly they're making this new product. We want to know what it is. It should not be taking this long. It just shouldn't. And they need something that competes with Hearthstone and the Elder Scrolls card game and all that stuff. Like, you need to communicate to your base audience because there's just so much like random speculation. What's going to happen with this new client? What's going to happen to my old cards? Are we going to be more of a Duel of the Planeswalkers? Are you going to build something that can be played on a phone so then it's not necessarily Magic? Tell us. Give us an indication, right?
Right, yeah, yeah.
Lastly, and the big problem I've had that's popped up in the last 2 years is issues with the master sets. Sometimes I feel like we're kind of alone in this criticism, Cameron, because, listen to other shows, read articles. A lot of people really liked Eternal Masters. And I found it hugely disappointing on a lot of levels. And look, I feel like you are taking advantage of people's willingness to open, quote, lottery cards with the master sets. But every summer now, it's just feeling like an opportunity for my card shop to, you know, take advantage of players. That's what it feels like.
Yeah,
whatever you want to call it. It stinks because the packs are super expensive. You've made it more about the mythic rares than anything else. The MTG Finance community, of course, just goes in a tizzy every time because of, oh, what commons, uncommons are getting reprinted, whatever. And look, I just don't care about any of that. I want people to have access to cards, and I want to enjoy myself, and I want to pay for an affordable draft. But because it's a, quote, premium product, you're asking me to pay the price of an actual video game, like a brand new off-the-shelf video game, for 3 hours worth of entertainment, which is craziness. And I think you're going to see diminishing returns on this. It's going to be, you know, like a Call of Duty, where the first few Call of Duties came out, gangbusters. But once you milk this, you know, you go to the well so many times, what's this going to be with Modern Masters 2021? Mm-hmm. Are people going to be happy with that? Are they going to be happy with buying $10 packs that are in cardboard, that are weirdly, you know, structured? Are they going to be happy with these high-value mythics and some boxes being worth $40? I think you got to be really careful with that, you know?
Agreed.
All right. So, Cameron, we've yabbered on and on and on. I want to just, before we get into extra stuff that's going on with us, I do want to point people to Tulerian Community College's newest video. But basically, he in this video talks about losing his job, and now he's going to try and make a living just doing his thing on YouTube. So, you know, it's a great video, and he's a really important content creator in the community, and I think it'd be great to support him. But I want to say this too. You know, with heavy meta and the A-team ending recently, you know, creating content for Magic is tough. It's tough to do it on a weekly basis. And, you know, especially when you're involved in video and all these things. And Cameron and I have been, like, super lucky. Like, we have a great audience. Like, unbelievable. But I want to just challenge you, if you're out there and you listen to a lot of shows, and especially a show that doesn't get a lot of credit or, you know, doesn't have a lot of, like, engagement or whatever, you know, just something as simple as tweeting at them or writing them an email is a huge motivating factor. And it really helps content creators out there to just get them going. Not every show has, you know, you feel kind of like you're in a bubble sometimes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, support guys on Patreon. But if you can't do that, like if you just listen to one of the smaller casts that's like on episode 8 or whatever, man, just shoot them an email. You would be amazed at what that does for them.
Yeah. Early on for us, that was huge.
It was totally huge. And you know, just kind of cultivating the community, I think, matters. So anyway, let's get out of this segment. Let's come back and talk about what's going on with us. All right, Cameron, before we close out the show, just want to talk briefly about things that have been going on with us. You've been traveling throughout Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've been taking in a book, right?
Yeah. So I picked up a book just based off of a whole bunch of, like, you know, random people giving, like, their top 10 sci-fi books of the year. And extrapolating all of that, I came to the conclusion that I needed absolutely to read this hard sci-fi book called Arkwright. It's by Alan Steele, who is, you know, kind of known as, like, a really good hard sci-fi writer. And the thing that I like about Steele over somebody like Isaac Asimov or Arthur Clarke is that he really does a good job creating likable characters, which, you know, sometimes I think with, like, hard sci-fi, it's all about, like, these conceptual, broad topics, philosophical.
Stephenson.
Yeah, where great, and I love discussing and thinking about that stuff, but sometimes you just want, like, a likable character that you can relate to as that stuff is happening. Mm-hmm. And Arkwright seems to do that. It's this idea that a sci-fi author who is a contemporary of, like, Isaac Asimov and Arthur C. Clarke created a foundation in the late 90s and early 2000s where they're going to create interstellar travel, right? And so it's about this family's journey of, like, building an interstellar sail ship to go to, you know, a planet 22 light years away. And it is hard sci-fi in that sense. But it also follows the cast of characters of all these like family members through the hundreds of years that it takes to achieve this.
So by hard sci-fi, you don't mean that everybody has really good abs. You mean that
Yes, both they have good abs, and it's hard in the sense of like it's trying to be as close as possible to this is what it would take in order to, you know, do interstellar travel. So it's good. I really, really enjoy it. So that's my recommendation, Arkwright. It's like on the top 10 lists of like everybody as far as like, you know, best sci-fi of 2016. And yeah, I would give it a if you like that sort of world and you like hard sci-fi and you like the likes of somebody like Arthur C. Clarke and Asimov as far as like speculating on like what the future of humanity holds, this is right up there. So it's good.
Cool, man. I'll have to check that out. I'm looking for a good audiobook to get me through not baseball season, you know?
Yeah.
Just really quickly wanted to mention a role-playing game. They kind of came out this summer, and I didn't really know much about it, but I picked it up, and I'm a few hours in, but it's definitely scratching an itch. It's called I Am Setsuna. Have you ever heard of that game?
I don't know anything of this.
So it is a traditional, I mean, traditional JRPG. In fact, a lot of the mechanics are straight out of Chrono Trigger or the PlayStation 1 Final Fantasies. And basically what happened is there's these... there's this company that formed in Japan called the Tokyo RPG Company, and all their mission statement is to create classic role-playing games in that style. And I mean, it feels like Chrono Trigger. You know, there's some things I don't necessarily love about it, like the art style, but the turn-based menu-driven combat is exactly what I wanted. And it is a very quick pick up and play. You can play for a couple hour or an hour, maybe 30 minutes, get through some battles, grind up your guys, whatever. But it also follows that kind of narrative structure. The narrative is actually quite a bit more interesting than your traditional, like Final Fantasy from that era. Mm-hmm. Setsuna is the character. She has to, it's kind of like a snowy kind of apocalyptic land. And she has to be the human sacrifice to stop some kind of untold evil, and you play as the escort to her. And so you have to get her to this place so she will sacrifice herself. And so the story's a little bit dark, but man, the combat, everything mechanically, it's very sound. And there's like no load times because we're not in 1996 anymore, right?
Yeah, right.
So you can just jump in and out of this combat, and it's a lot of fun. So apparently in Japan, it came out on Vita, and it didn't come out here, and as such, it's kind of a sales flop. Which is a little bit of a bummer because it would be perfect for cross save and cross play. So, anyway, that's all I got for this week, Cameron. I mean, we've been talking a ton, but if someone would like to get a hold of you via the Twitter, where would they do that?
They can do that at @Cameron_McCoy.
And I'm @CurtisNow. Our official show feed is @SpikeFeedMTG. We will check you guys next week.